The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo, Part 4, The Yoga of Self-Perfection, Chapter 19, The Nature of the Supermind, continuing with the explanation of the character of the Supreme Supermind, bottom of page 787. The mind, on the contrary, is limited and incapable in all these directions. Mind cannot arrive at identity with the Absolute, even when by a stretch of the intellect it conceives the idea, but can only disappear into it in a swoon or extinction. It can only have a kind of sense or an intimation of certain absolutes, which it puts by the mental idea into a relative figure. It cannot grasp the universal, but only arrives at some idea of it through the extension of the individual, or a combination of apparently separate things, and so sees it either as a vague infinite or indeterminate or a half-determined largeness, or else only in an external scheme or constructed figure. The indivisible being and action of the universal, which is its real truth, escapes the apprehension of the mind because the mind thinks it out analytically by taking its own divisions for units, and synthetically by combinations of these units, but cannot seize on and think entirely in the terms, though it may get at the idea and certain secondary results, of the essential oneness. It cannot either know truly and thoroughly even the individual and apparently separate thing, because it proceeds in the same way, by an analysis of parts and constituents and properties, and a combination by which it erects a scheme of it, which is only its external figure. It can get an intimation of the essential inmost truth of its object, but cannot live constantly and luminously in that essential knowledge and work out on the rest from within outward, so that the outward circumstances appear in their intimate reality and meaning as inevitable result and expression and form and action of the spiritual something, which is the reality of the object. And all this which is impossible for the mind to do, but possible only to strive towards and figure, is inherent and natural to the supramental knowledge. The third characteristic of the supermind arising from this difference, which brings us to the practical distinction between the two kinds of knowledge, is that it is directly truth-conscious, a divine power of immediate, inherent, and spontaneous knowledge, an idea holding luminously all realities and not depending on indications and logical or other steps from the known to the unknown, like the mind, which is a power of ignorance. The supermind contains all its knowledge in itself, is in its highest divine wisdom in eternal possession of all truth, and even in its lower, limited, or individualized forms, has only to bring the latent truth out of itself. The perception which the old thinkers tried to express when they said that all knowing was in its real origin and nature only a memory of inwardly existing knowledge. The supermind is eternally and on all levels truth-conscious and exists secretly even in mental and material being, surveys and knows the things, even obscurest, of the mental ignorance and understands and is behind and governs its processes because everything in the mind derives from the supermind and must do so because everything derives from the spirit. All that is mental is but a partial, a modified, a suppressed or half-suppressed figure of the supramental truth, a deformation or a derived and imperfect figure of its greater knowledge. The mind begins with ignorance and proceeds towards knowledge. As an actual fact, in the material universe, it appears out of an initial and universal inconscience, which is really an involution of the all-conscious spirit in its own absorbed, self-oblivious force of action. And it appears, therefore, as part of an evolutionary process. First, a vital feeling towards overt sensation. Then, an emergence of a vital mind capable of sensation, and, evolving out of it, a mind of emotion and desire, a conscious will, a growing intelligence. And each stage is an emergence of a greater suppressed power of the secret supermind and spirit. The mind of man, capable of reflection, and a coordinated investigation and understanding of itself, and its basis and surroundings, arrives at truth, but against a background of original ignorance, a truth distressed by a constant surrounding mist of incertitude and error. Its certitudes are relative, and for the most part, precarious certainties, or else are the assured fragmentary certitudes only of an imperfect, incomplete, and not an essential experience. It makes discovery after discovery, gets idea after idea, adds experience to experience and experiment to experiment, but losing and rejecting and forgetting and having to recover much as it proceeds. And it tries to establish a relation between all that it knows by setting up logical and other sequences, a series of principles and their dependencies, generalizations and their application, and makes out of its devices a structure in which mentally it can live, move, and act, and enjoy, and labor. This mental knowledge is always limited in extent. Not only so, but in addition, the mind even sets up other willed barriers, admitting by the mental device of opinion certain parts and sides of truth, and excluding all the rest. Because if it gave free admission and play to all ideas, if it suffered truth's infinities, it would lose itself in an unreconciled variety, an undetermined immensity, and would be unable to act and proceed to practical consequences and an effective creation. And even when it is widest and most complete, mental knowing is still an indirect knowledge, a knowledge not of the thing in itself, but of its figures, a system of representations, a scheme of indices, except indeed when in certain movements it goes beyond itself, beyond the mental idea to spiritual identity. But it finds it extremely difficult to go here beyond a few isolated and intense spiritual realizations, or to draw or work out or organize the right practical consequences of these rare identities of knowledge. A greater power than the reason is needed for the spiritual comprehension and effectuation of this deepest knowledge. This is what the supermind, intimate with the infinite, alone can do. The supermind sees directly the spirit and essence, the face and body, the result and action, the principles and dependencies of the truth as one indivisible whole, and therefore can work out the circumstantial results in the power of the essential knowledge, the variations of the spirit in the light of its identities, its apparent divisions in the truth of its oneness. The supermind is a knower and creator of its own truth. The mind of man, only a knower and creator in the half-light and half-darkness of a mingled truth and error, and creator, too, of a thing which it derives altered, translated, lessened from something greater than and beyond it. Man lives in a mental consciousness, between a vast subconscious, which is to his seeing a darkened conscience, and a vaster superconscient, which he is apt to take for another but a luminous inconscience, because his idea of consciousness is confined to his own middle term of mental sensation and intelligence. It is in that luminous superconscience that there lie the ranges of the supermind and the spirit. The supermind is again, because it acts and creates as well as knows, not only a direct truth consciousness, but an illumined, direct, and spontaneous truth will. There is not, and cannot be in the will of the self-knowing spirit, any contradiction, division, or difference between its will and its knowledge. The spiritual will is the tapas, or enlightened force of the conscious being of the spirit, effecting infallibly what is there within it. And it is this infallible operation of things, acting according to their own nature, of energy producing result and event according to the force within it, of action bearing the fruit and event involved in its own character and intention, which we call variously in its different aspects law of nature, karma, necessity, and fate. These things are to mind the workings of a power outside or above it, in which it is involved and intervenes only with a contributory personal effort, which partly arrives and succeeds, partly fails and stumbles, and which even in succeeding is largely overruled for issues different from, or at any rate greater and far more reaching, than its own intention. The will of man works in the ignorance by a partial light, or more often flickerings of light, which mislead as much as they illuminate. His mind is an ignorance striving to erect standards of knowledge, his will an ignorance striving to erect standards of right, and his whole mentality, as a result, very much a house divided against itself, idea in conflict with idea, the will often in conflict with the ideal of right or the intellectual knowledge. The will itself takes different shapes. The will of the intelligence, the wishes of the emotional mind, the desires and the passion of the vital being, the impulsions and blind or half-blind compulsions of the nervous and the subconscious nature. And all these make by no means a harmony, but at best a precarious concord among discords. The will of the mind and life is a stumbling about in search of right force, right tapas, which can wholly be attained in its true and complete light and direction only by oneness with the spiritual and supramental being. The supramental nature, on the contrary, is just, harmonious, and one. Will and knowledge there only light of the Spirit and power of the Spirit, the power effecting the light, the light illumining the power. In the highest supramentality, they are intimately fused together and do not even wait upon each other, but are one movement, will illumining itself, knowledge fulfilling itself, both together a single jet of the being. The mind knows only the present and lives in an isolated movement of it, though it tries to remember and retain the past and forecast and compel the future. The supermind has the vision of the three times, Trikala Drishti. It sees them as an indivisible movement and sees two, each containing the others. It is aware of all tendencies, energies, and forces as the diverse play of unity and knows their relation to each other in the single movement of the one spirit. The supramental will and action are therefore a will and action of the spontaneous, self-fulfilling truth of the spirit, the right, and at the highest, the infallible movement of a direct and total knowledge. The supreme and universal supermind is the active light and tapas of the supreme and universal self as the Lord and Creator, that which we come to know in yoga as the divine wisdom and power, the eternal knowledge and will of the Ishvara. On the highest planes of being, where all is known and all manifests as existences of the one existence, consciousnesses of the one consciousness, delights self-creations of the one Ananda, many truths and powers of the one truth, there is the intact and integral display of its spiritual and supramental knowledge. And in the corresponding planes of our own being, the jiva shares in the spiritual and supramental nature and lives in its light and power and bliss. As we descend nearer to what we are in this world, the presence and action of this self-knowledge narrows, but retains always the essence and character when not the fullness of the supramental nature, and its way of knowing and willing and acting, because it still lives in the essence and body of the Spirit. The mind, when we trace the descent of the self towards matter, we see as a derivation which travels away from the fullness of self, the fullness of its light and being, and which lives in a division and diversion, not in the body of the sun, but first in its nearer and then in its far-off rays. Pausing at bottom of page 792, to be continued with the remainder of this chapter in the next reading.